Kia ora, I'm Jono here, and I'm the Senior Communications Advisor for Heritage New Zealand Pohiri Taonga, based in our Northland office here in Kerikeri. One of the supporters of our work in Northland is Jack Kemp. Jack is a Bay of Islands-based volunteer for Heritage New Zealand. Among his many interests, Jack is an explorer, a diver, an artist, an entrepreneur, and a researcher. Crucially for me, Jack is also a seemingly inexhaustible supply of really good stories. So when he pops into our Kerikeri office from time to time, it's always great to catch up. Recently, Jack came in and started talking to me about Northland's tung oil industry. Clearly one of New Zealand's more harebrained horticultural initiatives. He mentioned an article he'd read on this brief chapter in New Zealand's agricultural history, recorded in a book by local Kerikeri historian Nancy Pickmere. Tung oil comes from the nut of the tung tree. When pressed, the nut, which is actually a seed, produces an oil that the Chinese have used for thousands of years as a natural varnish and wood preservative. Jack told me about a scheme in the 1930s in which Northlanders were encouraged to invest in the planting of tung trees with a view to harvesting the precious oil and enjoying the manifold financial benefits that would accrue. The scheme was widely promoted to New Zealanders, many of whom seemed pretty keen to get some tung action themselves. One such investor was Jack's great aunt, Aunt Daisy, who was a school teacher living and working in the far reaches of the far north. Aunt Daisy invested her life savings in the fledgling tung oil industry, and the result was, well, somewhere in Jack's possession, he has an actual nut from one of the few surviving tung trees in the far north. Unfortunately, it's a bit elusive. In fact, it seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth, a bit like New Zealand's tung oil industry, and sad to say, Aunt Daisy's life savings. As an example of one of our less successful agricultural schemes, as well as its rich potential for cringe-inducing puns, I felt strongly that this story needed to be told. The title of my story is Tung Nut Scheme, Not Quite the Good Oil. A species of tree used to make a plant-based product, possibly decades ahead of its time, helped stimulate investment in the early years of commercial settlement of Kerikeri in the 1930s. The economic potential of the tung tree, whose seeds produced an oil that has been used by the Chinese as a natural varnish for 2,500 years, was identified and promoted in parts of the North Island in the 1930s as a surefire investment. Its future, however, appears to have been cut short by climate, mismanagement, and the dire impact of the Great Depression. For Kerikeri resident Jack Kemp, the tung nut collapse in the 1930s is personal. One of his great aunts, Daisy Hurd, invested in the fledgling tung oil industry and felt firsthand the tung lashing that happened when the whole scheme collapsed. Somewhere I have a solitary nut from one of the tung trees that was growing in the Tepaki area where my aunt was living and working, says Jack, who is also a Heritage New Zealand Pohiri Taonga Northland volunteer. It's really the only tangible product of what was promised would be a highly lucrative industry. Daisy Hurd was a teacher based at Tepaki in the far north, and like many people, invested her hard-earned cash into the widely promoted scheme. She lived close to a tung tree plantation that was trumpeted in a bit of advertorial appearing in a 1931 edition of the Northland Age as being destined to be in the near future the centre of a great tung oil industry that will add greatly to the prosperity of the North. The anonymous copywriter described the hospitality of Mr. and Mrs. Richardson, whose estate covered 47,000 acres and ran right across the peninsula. Here, tung oil trees were being raised from an impressive 147,000 seeds in a nursery that had been established on site. The writer continued, "The soil, a light loamy one, had been ploughed and disked, reduced to a fine tilth for the reception of seeds which were planted in rows about 2 feet, 3 inches apart." Clearly, everything was all go in the far north, and Daisy and the Richardsons weren't the only ones to sign up to the tung oil revolution. In Kerikeri, a similar scheme to the Alderton Income Home schemes, which promoted citrus orchard home and income packages, also operated, but promoting the tung nut tree to potential buyers instead. George Alderton had founded the Northern Advocate newspaper in his early 20s and retired from journalism in 1897 at the age of 43. Swapping journalism for real estate, in 1925 he started promoting the idea of settlement in Kerikeri, offering the idea of home and income citrus groves, similar to schemes he had seen in America, as being the ultimate lifestyle block. The New Zealand Tang Oil Corporation, one of 11 such companies operating in New Zealand, according to local historian Nancy Pickmere in her book Kerikeri Heritage of Dreams, offered a similar product. Clearly, Kerikeri was the new frontier for slightly off-the-wall, almost too-good-to-be-true settlement schemes. By the early 1930s, after its inception, Alderton's North Auckland Land Development Corporation found itself in serious difficulties, says Jack. The investors pulled through it, however, and with hard work and grit, established what would become a flourishing citrus and horticulture industry in and around Kerikeri. Sadly, the tang oil industry wouldn't be as fortunate. The early 1930s provided a promising start for the tang tree investors. In Kerikeri alone, the company purchased and planted about 30 acres of the tree near Waipapa. The virtues of the tree were nothing short of miraculous, according to the promotional material, of which there appeared to be quite a bit. They all told the same mellifluous story. No pests, no pruning, no spraying. The crop falls to the ground and is gathered after all others are finished, read one brochure. Pick out an odd corner of your farm, plant tang trees on it and make it lift the mortgage or overdraft in the next few years while you carry on with your regular farming. By the fifth year, profits of £10 to £15 per acre were promised to the enterprising punter, rising to £40 by 8 years. Sadly, the projections were not grounded in reality, and the dizzying optimism of the tang oil marketing team failed to materialise as pounds, shillings, or even pence. It was the December 1938 New Zealand Journal of Agriculture that shed light on the truly disastrous results of the tang oil investment revolution when it published a summary of an inspection of 10 North Auckland plantations totalling 4,548 acres. The figures were sobering. Apparently satisfactory trees, 55 acres. Unsatisfactory trees, 733 acres. Worthless, dead and dying trees, 3,760 acres. With what appeared to be a cultivation success rate of barely 1%, the New Zealand climate and soil wasn't producing the tang oil El Dorado that had been promised. That, combined with the effects of the Great Depression, meant the jig was pretty well up. In June 1936, the chief judge in equity, having heard evidence relating to one company's financial position, its tang trees and its defaults under its trust deed, ordered its liquidation, noting that the company had succeeded in losing practically the whole of its paid-up capital. This would become something of a trend. Tongue-tied investors in the north, desperate to make some money off their nuts, would feel the worst effects of the squeeze. In time, acres of tang trees would be ripped out and converted to pasture. Ironically, tang oil would appear to be a fantastic product. It's 100% natural, organic, sustainable, and can be used for applications when a food-grade oil is required, says Jack. Proponents of the tang oil revolution, like my Aunt Daisy, were on the right track. It could be that they were just 100 years before their time. Today, highly sought-after tang oil can retail for more than $50 a litre. I'm John O'Hare for Heritage New Zealand Pōhiri Taonga, Matewa.